Okay, hour number three tonight, and we get to talk to, without question, one of the most interesting people in our time with regards to religion. And religion has always been, in human history, a very, very powerful, overriding kind of a control vector, if you will. I'll just be kind. The Catholic Church, the biggest, 1.3 billion members, has been overthrown by international Zionist, Masonic, satanic powers. I'm not exaggerating. We've covered this many times with Father Paul Kramer. It's getting worse. Bergoglio, the fake pope, is spewing things now. It's quite a scene. And here we are in arguably the holiest month of the year, December. Christmas is coming. And I don't know yet, I have not a good reading yet, on how much of the evil that is coming out of the Vatican is being perceived by the masses in the Roman Catholic Church. We'll find out in time, I guess. Father Kramer, welcome back. Thank you for being here, as always.
Well, it's great to be back, and I hope we don't have any interruption. We've had a rather strong winds tonight. The lights have been flickering, but the electricity is on.
All right. Well, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Give us your update on Bergoglio and his obviously, he is succeeding to a significant degree with the overthrow of the church. I hate to say that, but how much damage has he done, and his peers? How much damage has he done to the church? Where are we now? What's left of the old church?
The old church is no longer situated in the Vatican.
Oh my! It has relocated, so to speak. All right.
It's not there. You do have some officials in the Vatican who are of the old faith, but. The force that is ruling is Freemasonry, is Bergoglio and his gang of sectarians. And many Catholics are not catching on,
right,
as to how evil he is. They know he's evil, but they don't know how evil. I heard a commentator saying the other day that there will probably be another fake pope, another anti-pope after Francis, who maybe even be much worse. And he said, Francis is bad, but he could be much worse. And what they don't understand is Francis is as bad as you can get, except he only does as much evil as he can get away with. Because if he were to reveal what he truly is, even those moderately progressive Catholics would understand that this man is of the devil and not of God.
Right.
So he is an adherent to the principle of gradualism. He said so much in the past. He believes in gradualism.
I hear you. Well, that's kind of a pernicious concept in and of itself, gradualism, right? You get an infection, and it slowly spreads and gets worse, and then it gets to a point where it's overwhelming to your system, and you're going to die. Gradualism, communism, isms. Why is it all isms are evil? But yes, gradualism, that's how they do it. They get a little here, and they get a little there. And pretty soon they've got a major foothold, and now the real church of 2,000 years has been literally forced to leave the Vatican. It's gone. There may be one or two or three hardcore loyalists still there. I don't know. I'm sure there probably are. But the overwhelming strength of control in the Vatican now is satanic evil. And I'm not a Catholic, but I see it. Go ahead, Father Kramer. Tell us more.
Bergoglio, Tucha Fernandez, and those people, they make sure they wear that mask. To deceive the people into thinking that they're still, in some manner, they're still somehow Catholic, in some manner. I don't know how people could be so taken in by this. If you look at cumulatively all the changes he's made in the church, all of the doctrines he's been preaching, you see that this is not the Catholic Church, and that these people are not Catholic at all. According to the principles of the evaluation, the qualification of heretics, that degree of suspicion, there are on so many points, there are what are called the indicia. Those are the evidence of heresy. If you have what is called a vehemently suspect of heresy, but you have a man who has three or four points that are vehemently suspect, that automatically upgrades his degree of suspicion to be violently suspect, which is moral certitude that the person is indeed a heretic, who is therefore not a Catholic, but an enemy of the faith.
Right.
Bergoglio has spewed such doctrines that are diametrically opposed to the very words of Jesus Christ in such a quantity, in such a profusion, that it's got to be clear to people, it should be clear to people, that this man is not a Christian. He has such contempt for the person of Jesus Christ. After all, I mean, Christ himself said, go forth, make disciples of all nations, teach them everything I've commanded you. It's pretty clear what Jesus Christ was saying, to make disciples of all nations. Bergoglio says, it is illicit to convince anyone of your faith. To try to convince someone of your faith, he says it's illicit, and he says it's venom. I mean, that's saying that the doctrine of Christ, the command of Jesus Christ, is venomous, according to Bergoglio. Who can believe that this man is a Christian? He's not.
I agree.
He's the founder of the Synodal Church. And this is another thing people have to understand. It's not just a question of the textbook theoretical question of a heretic pope, that you have a man who is supposedly a Catholic, but he goes astray on one point of doctrine or two points of doctrine, and he's going against the faith, and therefore he falls into heresy. We're not talking about someone like that with Bergoglio. We're talking about someone who simply does not believe in the Apostles' Creed, the apostolic tradition, the faith that we receive from the apostles. He doesn't believe any of that. He has a completely different religion. He is the founder, and he is not just personally a heretic. He is the founder of a new church, the founder of the Synodal Church. Now, the Catholic Church, there's always been a synodal element in the Catholic Church. There have been synods down through the centuries. The popes have called for general councils, which are a great universal form of synod, where the pope, together with the bishops of the church, discuss the doctrines and issues and matters of faith and morals and discipline. So usually the making important decisions, the pope is going to consult with the bishops. And not only with the officials of the Roman Curia, but with the bishops of the church and of the various parts of the world. So to get a good idea of what's the state of the church universally before he makes such decisions, this has always been part of the church's procedure. But it still has always been called the Catholic Church, And it's always had the Pope, who is in charge, who has the full authority to issue decrees and make the final decision on his own. And he doesn't have to take into account what the underlings are saying. If he, in his conscience, sees fit that they're wrong, and in order to preserve the faith and unity of the Church, he makes a decision that is not popular with the bishops. He has that prerogative. Right. He has that, because that is the power given to him, granted to him by God, as the successor of St. Peter. Bergoglio's papacy is different. Bergoglio's synod, the final document, reflecting the doctrine of that earlier document, the so-called study document, which was really a mission statement, about the exercise of authority, the exercise of the Pope's exercise of his primacy. They say that in these documents that the Pope must exercise his primacy synodally. No, they can't say that. That proposition is a heresy itself, because the First Vatican Council defined that the Pope has a full and supreme jurisdiction, a total fullness of supreme power, which means that even if the commissions and committees and synods and various delegated bodies with delegated authority study questions and make recommendations to the Pope, the Pope has the supreme power to accept or refuse what they say and issue the decree on his own. That is power given to him by God. So it is perverse that you have someone like Bergoglio who says that the Pope may not exercise the power given to him by God in the manner that it was given, in the manner and in the measure that it was given to him, but he has to be bound by the recommendations of his underlings, of his subordinates.
Understood. Right.
It's a different church.
Should we start, Father Kramer, should we start calling it the Synodal Catholic Church? Should we make that kind of a handle that we push out there often? The Synodal Church, as opposed to the genuine church.
Well, that's what they call it, because to call it the Synodal Church.
I've seen that. I mean, should we jump on that bandwagon too and make it obvious that it's a different church?
Yes, indeed. It is a different church. It is the Synodal Church. It is not the Catholic Church of before, which was a monarchical church. You have the primacy of Peter, which is passed down to his successors. That's the Catholic Church, which is the full and supreme jurisdiction of the primacy. So that's the Catholic Church, whereas the Synodal Church, unlike the Catholic Church, which has a synodal character to it to a degree, but ultimately ecclesiastical power, the jurisdiction, the apostolic jurisdiction of the Pope, which is the Petrine jurisdiction, not just the jurisdiction of the apostles, but of him who is the prince of the apostles, the one who had the authority over all the other apostles. That authority is passed down to the successor of Peter, who has that authority over all the bishops in the church. And that's why the Catholic Church is a primatial church. It is not a synodal church. There is a synodal element, but synodalism is not the quality that marks the very character of the church, of the Catholic Church. It is of the Synodal Church, because the Synodal Church is a church of synodalism. They have gotten rid of the Petrine primacy as it was instituted by Jesus Christ and exercised by St. Peter and his successors up until Bergoglio. Until the resignation, the invalid resignation of Pope Benedict XVI, and what has led up to this, of course, is the since the Second Vatican Council, the popes have fallen into the habit of being pushed into this idea of synodalism to a certain degree, to a certain extent. And Pope John Paul II, the Pope Benedict the 16th, did speak of the tension that they were having, the resistance that they were up against, because the hierarchy, the national hierarchies, the French hierarchy, the German hierarchy, and their representatives in the Vatican were trying to push reforms beyond the point where John Paul II and Benedict XVI, they were not willing to go beyond a certain point. And they were being pushed, they were attempting to push these two popes beyond to cross the line that they were not willing to cross. But now, with Bergoglio, we have one who is one of the spearhead of this apostasy, who willingly crosses those lines. But he does it in a way surreptitiously, so that he can preserve that appearance of that, at least that veneer of Christianity, even if the substance is gone. So that's the difference between Bergoglio and the popes who preceded this anti-pope.
I got it. Well, unfortunately, when this anti-pope, this fraud pope, dies and goes down for his reward, deep down, there'll be another. They've taken over. They're going to continue this. I don't know how, short of a hired mercenary military overthrow of the Vatican itself and the removal of all the frauds in there and the restoration of real Christian Catholics, I don't know how we're going to reverse this. I don't. Or will it be another form of Catholicism that begins to be adhered to by the masses? And these people are going to be de-emphasized, to say the least, with an outflow of formerly pious, seriously Christian Catholics. They're going to leave. We have to give them an alternative to go to. And I think that's certainly being talked about a lot. Formulated, perhaps. These are evil people, and I tell you, that guy Fernandez is to be watched very carefully. I've just got bad vibes about that guy, to put it in the vernacular. Very bad.
The church will go underground. It will be there, but it will, as Cardinal Henry Edward Manning said in 1861, quoting the unanimous opinion of the ancient church fathers, that the day will come when it will appear that the church has been swept off the face of the earth. It will appear that way. The church will be underground. The church will still be there, but like the days during the Roman persecutions, when the church was underground and they met in the catacombs to have their liturgy and their prayers. We're headed back into the catacombs now, and it's going to be that way very soon, when church and state, when the one world religion and the one world government combine forces to enforce their false religion, their demonic, devilish religion on the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then Catholicism in particular, but all that is Christian will be attacked and suppressed as much as they can. It's going to be an outright persecution with bloodshed.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Is there any way to get the Swiss guards to turn on these treasonous traitors and get rid of them? I'm just sort of having fun here. There's no fun with this, but I don't know. This is awful. The Swiss guards are guarding frauds, and international globalist puppets. Is there anything
there?
Right.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I would think a private appeal to the Swiss Guards or whoever, controls them might be in order. We these people really should physically be rounded up and arrested and removed under the aegis of the Swiss Guards. They're frauds.
Well, one thing that is incredible. Now, this Bergoglio has built in the Vatican this so-called eco garden to promote the environmentalism as it were, save the planet. And he talks about this. Whereas in the UK, they passed a law for euthanasia, which is legalizing murder. And you have involuntary euthanasia being carried out very surreptitiously, but it's being done not just in England and Ireland and Canada, but in the United States also it's being done. And people are being killed in the hospitals after... In some hospitals, a person who is over age 60, they'll automatically put up a sign saying, do not resuscitate.
Who put the DNR sign up? Who did that?
I guess they just, in some hospitals, that's just what they have, they call the protocol.
Huh.
From now on, people over 60 are going to get the DNR.
Well. Not a good situation.
Shocking stories about how they finished off some patients in the hospitals. I'm just absolutely shocking stories.
Give me one or two. No names. Just give me some ideas of what's going on.
All right. A man had his toes amputated, and they wheeled him back to his room, but without bandaging the wounds, and they let him bleed to death in the room.
Really? This is in a modern civilized hospital in a major city.
It's in the USA, I can tell you that.
Well, I'm not surprised. I'm seeing more and more calls for euthanizing people for money. Financial incentives are seniors, older people. Let's kill them all. But this world is not recognizable anymore. Give me another example. When toes go necrotic like that, and they have to remove them. There's a reason. There's an infection going on of some kind, something. That's not a good situation. And to let someone just bleed out like that, that's straight from hell. That's not human. That's not what medicine and hospitals are supposed to do. But I hear you. I believe it too. Tell me another one.
Oh, there was a nursing home in England where a friend of mine was saying that he had heard that they serve sherry to the women, and they serve, I think, beer to the men. But it will be laced with some kind of a poison, arsenic or whatever. I'm not sure. So they slowly poison the people. And so this friend of mine, he asked a priest who lived in that part of England if this is true or not. He said, oh, of course it's true. He says, I thought everyone knew that. I thought everyone knew about that.
Uh-huh.
So it was a well-known fact that they were doing that, but they're getting away with it. And nobody's stopping them. But the thing is this. When they make a euthanasia law that is a threat to the life of so many people, what did Bergoglio say? Nothing. Total silence.
This is
a consent. This silence construes consent. It is an indication.
Deadpan
of
silence. I get it. Wow. What an evil piece of garbage he is. He's awful. Just awful. worse than that.
And the only thing he can do is talk about the environment, as if nature out there, the planet, is more important than the human life on the planet. After all, the Word of God, sacred scripture, tells us that the planet, the created universe, was created for mankind. It was created right. for us. It was created to be our habitat. It's for right. us. It's ours. Now they've inverted it, and they're saying that the universe, that nature is sacred, and mm-hmm. that we're the ones that we nasty humans, we're the ones who are destroying nature, that we are the problem, and we are the ones who should be eliminated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's what the whole COVID vaccination campaign was worldwide. It's a genocidal move. Everybody knows that now. And people are dying constantly. Once they've been injected with that, most people begin to suffer systemic failure in their bodies. It takes time, but the 3 to 5 years is kind of a normal window for a lot of them. Some die quickly, like within a day or two. This is all orchestrated diabolically to kill. Canada's legalizing euthanasia. You know that case. I'm sure most people do. Case after case of vulnerable people are being killed now instead of cared for in Canada. These reports are coming in all the time. More than 15,000 Canadians are put to death, put to sleep every year by euthanasia. Some people are so grief-stricken about life and things. You know, there are medications, antipsychotics, whatever, I'm sure. Some of them are even asking to die because they can't access proper care in Canada's socialized system, right? Or some of them are so lonely, they've got nobody, their family's turned on them, and they want to die. So that's true. One Canadian doctor of death has admitted to killing personally over 400 people. This is going to elucidate some kind of a psychosis in some of these doctors. They're going to get to the point where they feel godlike. And I could see why they'd think that, but they're not God. They are taking life legally. It's all crazy. And then the idea of euthanizing people, I forget which country this was, somewhere in Europe, for money, older people, they're going to be given a stipend for every person that they kill off. It's crazy. It's really never been crazier out there.
Yes, well, in Canada, some people who, just because of their poverty, it's being suggested to them that they euthanize themselves.
Themselves. That's called suicide. Okay. Personally well, delivered.
Uh-huh. Assisted. That they, of course, they need the professional assistance to, so that the so-called professionals can get their fee. They wouldn't want people to snuff themselves and not get their cut.
It's true. So there's money in life, and there's money in disease, and there's lots of money in death. So it's all about money. If I'm not mistaken, didn't Jesus throw a certain group of people out of the temple, the money changers? Well, they're still here. They're still making money on human beings. This is disgusting. All right, so what do we look forward to in this Christmas season, Father Kramer? We'll talk to you. Let me see when you're on next. You'll be on December 20th, right before Christmas. So we'll have to do an update at that point in time.
Well, the question is, when will the war begin? Not if, but when.
Right.
It's very clear now. If it wasn't clear enough before, that the powers that be in Washington, they want a world war. They want a war with Russia.
It's no question. That's right.
the authorization of missiles, firing missiles on Russia from Ukraine, and then arming them with nuclear weapons. This is madness. This is insane.
I don't know that that has happened yet. That hasn't happened yet. None of these cruise missiles have had nuclear warheads, not that I know of.
They haven't fired the nuclear warheads yet. They have fired.
They've got them laced up. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, they're ready to go. Yeah.
They have fired missiles on Russia, and now they have approved the sending of nuclear weapons over to them.
Yes, that's true. It's no question that what you said is correct. The agenda here is crystal clear. World War III. That's the agenda. How much can Russia tolerate? Now, Russia is going to send their Oreshnik missile, the new missile, to Belarus and give Lukashenko the full authority over what targets to aim them at in Europe. So that's an interesting development. That probably will elicit an invasion by Poland of Belarus, which will bring in the full might of the Russian military into Belarus to help them deflect and eject the Polish invasion. That's probably what will happen. There are many ways for this to play out. I don't have the answers, but I think that's pretty clear. When I read that today, I said, oh, all right, so they're going to blame Lukashenko for targeting the Oreshnik at whatever, Warsaw, some military headquarters, some big base. We'll see. But the cards are all on the table, and they all say war. They don't say peace. No one's talking about peace, except Russia. Sergei Lavrov did, I didn't watch all of it, a great interview with Tucker Carlson. I'm sure it's online where you are right now, Father Kramer. And the brilliance of Sergei Lavrov is extraordinary. The patience and wisdom of Vladimir Putin, extraordinary. I'm just amazed that they've held back as long as they have. For our sake, I hope they continue. I just don't know how they can. They're being provoked further and further, almost by the week, toward war. I don't know how much more they can tolerate. I don't know. I don't know how it looks to you there, but you're going to get nailed. I don't mean Ireland per se, but certainly the UK will get hit hard. The UK is rotting already. It's been overthrown. It's not what it was by any stretch. And Germany, big trouble. We'll see. We'll see.
France
is the worst. France may be the worst. That guy Macron was put in there, obviously, by the globalist Zionist Masonic cartel. They put him in there, and he's done his job. He's demanding now to be. He's going to run. He says until 2026, I believe. I think it was 2026. Anyway, their agenda is clear. It's the same as the British. They want war, and whatever they want, the U.S. comes right along with it. Course. So I don't know.
Since the election last month, the mask has been torn off and the abject hypocrisy is there to be seen by all. All this posturing about defending Ukraine. We stand with Ukraine. And they don't give a hoot about Ukraine. They want war with Russia. That's all they want.
That's true. That's absolutely correct. And I just, again, it's all in Putin's hands. And Lavrov is, again, an extraordinary person. I urge all of you to take a look at that interview with Tucker, even half of it, and watch how that man thinks before he speaks. And compare that to what the world has had to see in the White House for 4 years. And Trump coming in, claiming he's going to make peace in Ukraine with Russia, while at the same time promising with every cell in his body to continue giving Israel as much money and weaponry as it wants to continue the absolute annihilation of the Palestinian people in Gaza and then the West Bank. Trump is a genocidal maniac, by definition, if he continues to fund it. And he's promised he will, and he has to, because he made a deal with Miriam Adelson, among others, $250 million, guaranteed her that the West Bank would be turned over to the Jewish state. Trump is not a leader. He's not what we want. He's not the man for world peace. Sorry. Doesn't work. Take him at his own word. We'll keep everything going to Israel as long as we're able and as long as they want it. That's not a peace president. He's a fraud.
I've been saying this all along, that World War III, the spark that will ignite World War III, will not come from Ukraine and Russia. It will come from, it will be caused by Israel in the Middle East.
And Israel is firmly behind the invasion of Syria right now. That's an Israeli operation with the CIA, of course, involved. Those so-called rebels who are invading, they're mercenaries. They're being paid for by the West. And that leaves Syria apparently about ready to collapse. Three of its major cities have fallen or are about to fall. And that leaves the whole thing right in whose lap? In Vladimir Putin's lap. He's got to deal with this one way or the other. And I think they're trying to force him to pull troops away from the Ukraine war, and direct them into Syria to try to stop the nation from falling apart and collapsing. And the Iranians are right there as well. So you got Russia and Iran now moving into Syria, I would expect, to try to stabilize the situation there. And the West, led by the Jews in Israel and the Americans, are pushing in. They're behind this entire invasion of Syria. It didn't just happen. And don't forget Erdogan. Turkey is firmly ensconced in the effort to overthrow Assad. So you got Turkey, you got the West, you got NATO to some degree, of course, and you have, I think, at the top of the heap, you have Israel behind the war against Assad and Syria. And that leaves it to Russia and Iran to try to stop it. I think they're trying to split Russia and weaken them. That would be my guess. Have them pull a couple hundred thousand troops out of Ukraine.
That has been on their agenda for a long time. Ever since the Project for the New American Century, their documents even explicitly stated that that was their their aim. That's what they intended to do.
Right. Yes, sir. Yeah. If Syria falls to these so-called, some call them terrorists, some call them whatever, they're paid mercenaries. This is all by design. If Syria falls, Russia will be more exposed to danger than ever. This is a big player. And the Americans in the northeast of Syria, still stealing their oil, refusing to leave. They're not invited. They have no right to be in Syria. This is all continuing to play out before the world, and yet no one does anything about it, just like no one does anything about the genocide in Gaza. Nothing happening. Or the genocide in Beirut, Lebanon. That's what the Jews do. If they can't win militarily, they start to kill people, the public. That's what they did in Lebanon. That's why there's a so-called ceasefire there now, which has been broken, I think, over 125 times, maybe more, by the Jewish state already. So I think we all know who the enemies of peace and freedom are. It's not hard to figure out. And unfortunately, the U.S. is right there at the top of the heap.
This is not the first time this happens in Lebanon. I remember back in 1982, they did the same thing.
Well, and what was the last Lebanese war with Israel? 2020? No, whenever it was. I'll look it up here. But the Lebanese Hezbollah defeated the Jews thoroughly and sent them home with their tail between their legs and many, many tanks destroyed, heavy pieces of equipment. They got big. They got their butts kicked, as they say. And that's was happening again this time. They couldn't get in there. So they started to kill masses of people. Isn't that nice? What a nice country. God. How much time do we have, Father Kramer? Weeks, months? I guess it's silly to even try to project. It's coming. Something big is coming.
I think we have roughly within 12 months there will be
You're being more generous than I would be. Yeah, sure.
Within 12 months. It could happen later this month. It could happen a year from now. But within this 12-month window, we're going to have a major war. And Europe is going to be totally at war.
I agree.
An interesting thing, too, is there are prophecies. For example, I mentioned before Blessed Elena Aiello and Marie Julie Jaheni, who spoke of a revolution taking place in Italy just before these things happened. And a friend of mine in Italy sent me an article. It's written in Italian, and it's explaining how the left is agitating now, manufacturing crises that are not really existing, but trying to stir up unrest as a prelude to overthrowing the government. Maloney's government is popular. It's not going to be a popular uprising. It's going to be Freemasonry using the control they have, having their people in command positions in the military, in the police, in the state, in the government, and using their people in these key positions, they will overthrow the state and set up a communist dictatorship. That's what they're going to do.
Right. Well, not surprised. There was a story I sent you a few days ago about Archbishop Vigano, and he says that, or the headline says, secret letters shed new light on Pope Benedict's resignation and Pope Emeritus title. Interesting. In the media dramatization of this overthrow, that's what it was. It was an overthrow. The actors, Ratzinger and Bergoglio, have been presented to us as bearers of antithetical theologies, when in reality they represent two successive stages of the same revolutionary process. This is a quote from Archbishop Vigano. Anything from that we need to discuss briefly?
There is some truth to that. Ratzinger's thought, as I've explained it well in my book, he had this idea of the reform of the papacy. John Paul II also spoke of reforming the papacy. They've all had this kind of idea. So it comes as no surprise. But Ratzinger, at the same time, Ratzinger was not fully given over to implementing such a thing. He was also pushed out. He became a target.
Oh yeah. Well, that, now for those of you who don't know, Ratzinger was Pope Benedict the 16th. Okay, just to keep that straight, and he was forced to live the last 9 years of his life in lockup in the Vatican. He wasn't free to get out and travel and talk, and he was Pope Emeritus, and he was kept carefully sealed away from the public. And he wrote, what was disappointing for me, though, the book he wrote didn't really tell the truth. It kind of went along and covered up and played with this ugly game of overthrow. And I figured he was going to go out in a blaze of glory and tell the truth, but he didn't.
No, he didn't.
I guess there's nothing to be said about that. He's gone now, and I don't know. Is there any possibility, though, seriously, that there could be a physical overthrow and house cleaning in the Vatican?
There will be eventually. Whether the next true Catholic pope will have power in the Vatican or outside the Vatican, that remains to be seen. But eventually, the papacy will be restored to the Vatican, and they will clean house, and they will throw all these people out.
Well, I hope you're right.
That was foretold.
Again, I'm not being a Catholic. I'm just disgusted by what I see happening. Outraged. It's awful, and it's quite clear. There's no real mystique about it. You can see what's going on if you pay attention.
I remember reading a prophecy made by Blessed Anne Catherine Emmerich, where she foretold that there would come a pope who would throw all those people out.
Well, now that's interesting. All right. Well, I think that would be a very fine thing to see in these dark days, before, during, or after World War III. I'm not optimistic.
And there's another whose prophecy filled three volumes, Jeanne Le Royer, known as the Sister Jeanne de la Sainte, Jeanne de la Nativité, Sister of the Nativity. Her prophecies filled three books, and she says the same thing as Blessed Anne Catherine Emmerich about
three books. All right.
About them. These crooks and frauds being kicked out of the Vatican, that their time will come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
So we can expect that to come. Jesus Christ is the one who is in control of his church. He's the head of the church, not them, not Bergoglio, not Tuccio. They're not the heads of the church. Jesus Christ is. He's going to. And we saw he cleansed the temple once during his earthly life, and he's going to cleanse the temple again.
Good. Now it'd be nice to see. We're running out of time here. A lot of talk about the Antichrist. Can you give us a couple minutes? We have 2 minutes left. Is the Antichrist here now? There have been such claims made. Where are we in that regard? Do we still expect it to happen?
We expect it to happen, but we don't know when for sure. Exactly when for sure, I don't know. And right. I can only say when he manifests himself, we will know. We'll know. There'll be those who will be deceived, who will accept him as the Christ.
Right.
But then there will be those who, preserved in God's grace and wisdom, through their faith, they will understand. They will see with the eyes of faith and understand that that man is the Antichrist when he manifests himself.
Uh-huh.
But we won't really know until he manifests himself when he's going to reign. It could be in our day, but again, it could be another 50 years off. I don't know.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Anything in summary you want to leave us with this visit that we haven't touched upon that you might have wanted to mention?
Well, I can only say that according to the prophecies I've read, that this interregnum without a true Catholic pope is not going to last very long. Blessed Anna Maria Taigi said back in the 1800s that it would last 25 months or more. And there was in the 14th century, John de Vatighero, who said the same thing, 25 months or more. And there was a Saint Ignatius of Santia who spoke of roughly a period of 3 years without a pope. So we're talking about sometime between 2 and 3 years, a 2 to 3 year period, that there will not be a pope, not be a true pope. So it's not going to be much more. It can't be more than another year of this charade going on in the Vatican. It's going to be ended soon. And I think it's my own gut feeling is that sometime in the coming year, we're going to get a true Catholic Pope.
Well,
in one way or the other.
Big changes coming. This next year is going to be a wild one. Father Kramer, thank you very much for being here again. Always fascinating, and we will talk to you on the 20th of this month, just before Christmas. Okay, thank you. All right, back with you tomorrow night. Take care. Still time to prepare, and I hope you can do that. We will talk tomorrow. Thanks for being here.